definitely a big issue, and it's not just a political one, right? It's going to have a giant effect on people's lives.
And finally, Andrew, let's end where we began, which was with the elections in Ohio, but with J.D. Vance, the best-selling author of Hillbilly Elegy, the Trump-supported Republican senatorial candidate winning, its significance.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's definitely, you know, it's going to be perceived as a win for Trump because Donald Trump did endorse his campaign. His son had definitely done a lot of rallies with him, as did the former president. And, you know, it's both candidates were pretty conservative.
We have 10 seconds.
I guess J.D. Vance was probably seen as, you know, more anti-establishment. But, you know, it's probably not terribly different than if Josh Mandel had won.
Well, Andrew Perez, senior editor and reporter at The Lever, will link to your reports at democracynow.org. And a clarification to one of our headlines. PayPal has canceled the account and frozen the funds of the independent news outlet Consortium News, which has criticized U.S. policy on Ukraine. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burr, Messiah Rhodes, Amin Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Camille Baker, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu, Joe John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Mary Conlin, Juan Carlos Dalviva. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
This is Mona Bowen of Film at 11 here on KBOO Portland, and it's time for the spring membership drive. As you know, KBOO is supported by listeners just like you, and because of that, we have access to Democracy Now!, many specialist shows, music of all kinds, and of course, Film at 11, along with an online archive of every show. Becoming a member is easy. Go to KBOO FM and click on the red donate button in the upper right corner and follow the pointers. This spring, any donation up to $12,000 will be matched until the end of May. So please visit KBOO FM and click on the red donate button and help KBOO to continue to serve its listeners just like you.
Organization planning a virtual event? Looking for a media co-sponsorship? Then contact KBOO today. KBOO's community media co-sponsorships provide free on-air promos for local nonprofits and small organizations, as well as a listing on our website's community calendar and promotions on our social media. For more information and to apply, visit kboo.fm/co-sponsorships today.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership Hive Drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland shows its plans for spending extra tax revenue. Demonstrators around the country protest to defend the right to choose. And, in wildlife news, a baby orca whale has been spotted in the Cape Cod off the Oregon coast. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. We are currently in our spring membership Hive Drive, so if you'd like to support your local community radio station, now is a great time. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. I'm Josh Salem. Portland expected lower tax revenue from businesses last year because of the pandemic. Instead, the city's largest companies made higher than normal profits, and Portland has about $35 million extra dollars in tax revenue that it can spend this year. Mayor Ted Wheeler proposed a new budget this week that uses this one-time spending to address a number of issues in the city. Wheeler proposes spending some of the money on hiring unarmed safety specialists in the police bureau, 42 of them, and fully funding the resources needed to take the Portland street response 24 hours. $5 million is set aside for the city to purchase land to build affordable housing. $13 million is dedicated to stemming gun control, hiring more park rangers, and funding initiatives in the Office of Violence Prevention. The city's graffiti and trash cleanup budget will also be beefed up in a new budget proposal. The full proposal list will be made public at a work session at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, and Portlanders can comment that evening at 6:30 p.m. at the city budget hearing. Following the leaked Supreme Court opinion that would end the federal abortion protection of Roe v. Wade, protesters gathered around the country. In Portland, around 600 people gathered downtown to affirm the right to choose. Beside the protests, legal experts are worried about what other current laws and rights will be overturned next. Priscilla Smith, lecturer on law and reproductive justice at Yale Law School, said, quote, "If Justice Alito's draft becomes the real opinion, all of those issues, contraception, consensual sex, and marriage rights, certainly are all at risk," end quote. Alito argues that the right to abortion under the right to privacy is not explicit in the Constitution, and so neither are contraception or same-sex marriage. The Missouri state legislature tried earlier to make going to another state for an abortion illegal, and such bans are expected in the future, as well as bans on forms of conception mistakenly considered to cause abortions. Michigan is one of 23 states in the U.S. that has an abortion ban trigger law that will take effect if the Supreme Court indeed overturns Roe. The leaked draft opinion indicates that future is more likely than ever. Lily Bolke has more on pro-choice efforts in Michigan.
Michigan lawmakers and pro-choice advocates were among those gathering Tuesday at courthouses calling on the U.S. Supreme Court to protect a person's right to an abortion. Politico obtained and released a draft majority opinion indicating that 5 of the 9 high court justices would vote to overturn the decision in the case Roe v. Wade. Michigan is among dozens of states with an abortion ban on the books that would become law if that happens. State Representative Lori Pohutsky of Livonia notes Michigan's 1931 ban would criminalize both those seeking abortions and their providers. But she notes that wouldn't happen unless the draft opinion is made official.
One thing that we do want to make clear, just because there are patients who are seeking care, as of right now, abortion is legal in Michigan. And if you need abortion care, please feel free to seek it.
Pohutsky has introduced the Reproductive Health Act, which would protect access to abortion and contraception in the state and repeal the 1931 ban. But the legislature hasn't advanced the bill. Governor Gretchen Whitmer last month filed a lawsuit with the state Supreme Court to prevent a ban from going into effect. In the meantime, groups are working to gather signatures for a ballot petition that would add the right to an abortion in the state constitution. Marissa Kovach with the ACLU of Michigan calls this a, quote, all hands on deck moment.
We know that folks are scared, they're feeling helpless, and I want to put forth that the Reproductive Freedom for All ballot initiative is the best way to permanently protect reproductive freedom in Michigan.
More than two-thirds of Michigan voters have said in surveys that they want the Supreme Court to keep Roe v. Wade in place. Fewer than 20% support overturning the landmark decision. This is Lily Bolke with Michigan News Connection.
Americans around the country are protesting the Supreme Court's plan to overturn Roe v. Wade. With that story and more, it's Jonah Chester with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times. Americans across the country are protesting the U.S. Supreme Court's draft of an opinion that could overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 decision that guarantees the right to abortion. The draft also calls for overturning Casey v. Planned Parenthood, a 1992 ruling that upheld Roe. The opinion isn't final, abortion is still legal for the time being, and the justices could change their positions before it's formally published. In the draft opinion leaked to Politico, conservative Justice Samuel Alito, alongside 4 of his colleagues, wrote Roe was, quote, egregiously wrong from the start. Its reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision has had damaging consequences, unquote. President Joe Biden Tuesday argued the court's underlying argument for overturning Roe and Casey could impact other long-held fundamental rights.
It's a fundamental shift in American jurisprudence.
The leak of a draft opinion by the Supreme Court is unprecedented in modern times, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is calling for an investigation into who supplied the document to Politico.
Liberals want to rip the blindfold off Lady Justice. They want to override impartiality with intimidation.
Democrats are pushing a vote to formally codify access to abortion into law. Senator Patty Murray chairs the chamber's health committee. The Washington Democrat called the draft opinion a, quote, five-alarm fire.
And let's be clear, abortion bans will not actually end abortions. They will just make them unsafe. And they will hurt the women with the least resources and the tightest budgets.
In other news, new job openings hit a multi-year high this spring, according to new data from the U.S. Department of Labor. Employers reported about 11.5 million open positions as of March, the highest point since at least 2000. The report also reveals that the number of people voluntarily leaving their jobs was up to 4.5 million as of March, which is also a record high. NASA officials were before the Senate's Appropriations Committee Tuesday to answer questions on requested budget increases for the 2023 fiscal year. The Biden administration is asking for roughly $26 billion to fund the agency, 8% more than the 2022 fiscal year and the largest funding request in NASA's history. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says part of the funding will go towards NASA's Artemis program, which aims to put astronauts back on the moon and eventually on Mars.
But this time we're going back to learn, to stay, to develop new systems, new technologies, new techniques on how to live a long time in that hostile environment.
I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
U.S. health officials restated a recommendation that Americans wear masks on planes, trains, and buses yesterday. This comes after a court ruling last month that struck down a national mask mandate on public transportation. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended Americans age 2 and older wear well-fitting masks while on public transportation, including in airports and train stations, citing data about the current spread of coronavirus and projections of future COVID-19 trends. The Transportation Security Administration had been enforcing a requirement that passengers and workers wear masks for several months. The government had repeatedly extended the mandate, with the latest one set to expire May 3rd. But a federal judge in Florida struck down the rule on April 18th. The same day, the TSA said it would no longer enforce the mandate. The CDC already asked the Justice Department to appeal the decision, which the department did. CDC officials declined to comment on the status of that appeal, and Department of Justice officials did not immediately respond to a recent request for information. Washington State had the second most amount of disruptions to the school day last year because of the pandemic, according to a new study. Now there are efforts on to make sure students don't fall even further behind. Eric Tegetoff has more.
School disruptions from the pandemic have threatened to leave Washington students behind, but there are efforts to ensure they stay on track. Washington State saw the second most disruptions to school days in the past year, with 96% of parents reporting changes like in-class cancellations. And there's been a 14% drop in kindergarten enrollment. Will Detmer with the nonprofit Save the Children says the consequences of learning loss are even greater in rural Washington. That's why his organization focused on education programming for elementary school children there.
Children in our literacy programs are not only meeting reading expectations during the pandemic, but progressing 1 month ahead of expectations on average. And that progress is based on expected growth in a non-pandemic disrupted school year.
Dittmar says Save the Children partnered with 5 schools across 3 counties to reach 500 kids in the state, helping them after school and during the summer. It also had in-school literacy programs to help those who had fallen the furthest behind. Shane Garver is head of education, hunger, and resilience for Save the Children. He says recent research has shown that kids are 4 to 5 months behind in reading and math skills because of the pandemic.
When you look at students from minority communities, they're up to 6 months behind. And those coming from poverty, it's up to 7 months behind. So the learning loss has been stark.
Dittmar adds there's still a lot of work to do to ensure kids have the tools they need to succeed.
We all recognize that it is critically important to help these students that were so negatively impacted by decisions and realities that were out of their control or their parents' control or the school district's control.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Russian forces attacked multiple targets in Ukraine, aiming to disrupt supply lines for foreign weapons in the West and intensifying an offensive in the East. Meanwhile, the European Union proposed banning Russian oil imports. Russia used precision-guided missiles to destroy electric power facilities at 5 railway stations across Ukraine, with artillery and aircraft striking troop strongholds and fuel and ammunition depots. Ukrainian authorities said attacks in the eastern Donbas region left 21 civilians dead. Russia is said to be preparing to celebrate Victory Day on May 9th, commemorating the Soviet Union's defeat of Nazi Germany. Some expect Russian President Vladimir Putin to use the occasion to declare a limited victory, or even expand what he has called a special military operation to a wider war. A declaration of all-out war could allow Putin to introduce martial law and mobilize reservists to replace significant troop losses. The Kremlin dismissed the speculation as untrue and nonsense. As areas across Ukraine came under renewed attack, Belarus, which Russia used as a staging ground for its invasion, announced military drills. A top Ukrainian official said the country will be ready to act if Belarus joins the fighting. Russian attacks on rail infrastructure were meant to disrupt the delivery of Western weapons, according to a Russian Defense Ministry spokesman. Minister Sergei Shoigu said the West was, quote, stuffing Ukraine with weapons, end quote. Ukraine has urged the West to ramp up the supply of weapons ahead of a potentially decisive battle for the Donbas, which is said to be Russia's major target. Russia has deployed a significant number of troops in the region and appears to be trying to advance in the north. However, their push has been slow, as Ukrainian fighters have used long-range weapons to target the Russians. In addition to supplying weapons to Ukraine, Europe and the United States have sought to punish Moscow with sanctions. The EU's top official called on the 27-nation bloc on Wednesday to ban Russian oil imports. That needs unanimous approval from EU countries and will likely be the subject of significant debate. Hungary and Slovakia have already said they won't take part in any oil sanctions, but they might be exempted. The EU also proposed that Sberbank, Russia's largest bank, and two other major banks be disconnected from the SWIFT international banking payment system. You're listening to a spring membership Hive Drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Support KBOO with a donation by going online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned after this newscast for the triumphant return of News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO, followed by Noise Filter. At 6, it's Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be scattered showers and an overnight low of 53. Tomorrow, expect rain and a high of 56. Today in history, in 1970, the Kent State Massacre took place. National Guardsmen were called to a Vietnam War protest at Kent State and opened fire on students, killing 4 and injuring 9 more. The quote of the day is from Deborah Weil's book, Kent State. She wrote, "When the state silences freedom of assembly, in freedom to dissent, it silences the people it is sworn to protect." Oregon wants to offer legal refuge to displaced transgender youth and their families. In fact, legislators in some 18 states have the same plan. This comes in response to recent actions taken in conservative states. In Texas, for example, the governor has directed state agencies to consider placing transgender children in foster care. Multiple states have approved measures prohibiting gender-affirming healthcare treatments for transgender youth. Legislators in Minnesota and New York recently filed refuge state legislation modeled after a bill proposed in March by State Senator Scott Wiener in California. Democrats in 16 other states may follow suit, though about half of their legislatures are out of session or not currently accepting new bills. Wiener's bill would reject any out-of-state court judgments removing children from their parents' custody because they allowed gender-affirming health care. It would also make arrest warrants based on alleged violation of another state's law against receiving such care the lowest priority for California law enforcement. Also joining the effort are LGBTQ lawmakers in Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky, Maine, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington, and West Virginia. Wiener said it is despicable that any family would have to consider moving to a new state to protect a child, but if that happens, he hopes as many states as possible will welcome them. The coordinated effort on Tuesday came from the LGBTQ Victory Institute and other advocates. Wiener said, quote, "We're sick of just playing defense against what these red states are doing. We're going on offense. We're going to protect LGBTQ kids and their families, and we're going to build a rainbow wall to protect our community," end quote. J.D. Vance won the Republican senatorial primary in Ohio. Vance is a Trump supporter, venture capitalist, and an author of the book Hillbilly Elegy. New York Magazine's Sarah Jones said of Hillbilly Elegy, quote, "Vance's characterizations of the poor only repackaged myths about welfare queens and the terminal laziness of the disadvantaged," end quote. Congressman Tim Ryan won the Democratic primary, handily defeating progressive candidate Morgan Harper. Ryan said of his opponent, quote, "Vance is an out-of-touch millionaire who's made a career of bashing the working class and is the worst possible choice to represent Ohio," end quote. Republican Rob Portman currently holds that Senate seat, and a Ryan victory would give the Democrats an additional senator. Tribal advocates are discussing the need to forward the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. The Obama administration endorsed the declaration in 2010, but there hasn't been movement since then. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal advocates are discussing the need to advance the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Mountain West News Bureau's Robin Vincent reports.
Advocates say it's a human rights imperative. The declaration recognizes Native peoples' survival and self-determination, their land and culture, and political participation. Countries such as Canada, Mexico, and New Zealand are taking steps to implement it. Tribal leaders and advocates here say it's time for the U.S. to do the same. For example, they want the government to have closer consultation with tribes on key issues. Attorney Walter Echohawk is a member of the Pawnee Nation. He says the Obama administration endorsed the declaration in 2010, but there's been little movement since.
We have no national plan here in the U.S. to implement the declaration, and the Biden administration appears strangely silent on the implementation effort here.
Echohawk points out the federal government is investing billions in protecting the rights of Ukrainians. He wants to see similar measures enacted here to protect Indigenous peoples. For National Native News, I'm Robin Vincent.
This spring, in the southwest Alaska region of Bristol Bay, the Traditional Council of Nuustea'ak partnered with a program that connects rural communities with Alaska Native artists. KDLG's Izzy Ross talked with one of those artists who wants to help people use art to heal.
Danielle Larsgaard, a commercial fisher and a domestic violence counselor, recently embarked on a new business endeavor, a traveling art studio called Alriak Arts. She wants to hold workshops on how people can use art to process emotions and address trauma.
Bridging the gap between modern art and bringing back traditional art. Our minds, our bodies, our hands, our souls, we heal best when we're practicing our cultural lifestyle, traditional lifestyle.
Larsgaard brought her studio to Nuustea'ak during the last week in April as part of AmeriCorps' Resilient Alaska Youth After School program. It partners with tribes, schools, and nonprofits in rural communities statewide to support youth activities. The program teamed up with Nuustea'ak's Traditional Council to have Larsgaard lead the art workshops. She teaches a traditional drum making class where students craft 15-inch, 16-sided instruments. She also hosts an art therapy paint night with parents. Matthias Suskuk with the Traditional Council says at least 22 kids participated in the workshop. so many that a few had to work on the project as a team.
We started with drum making. We started the drum part, the circle thing, so it could be smooth for the deer skin we're going to use. And then while that's drying up, we'll probably do painting.
For Larsgaard, these aren't just art projects. She wants to address the generational gap created by boarding schools and other historical traumas.
A lot of generations didn't learn how to preserve grass or to go out and get hides and to stretch them and make drums and make rain gear and stuff like that. And so with that generational gap, I'm fulfilling it with teaching these traditional classes for individuals who didn't have an uppa or an umma to walk them alongside and teach those things, or a mom and dad to teach them how to live off the land or how to live off the water.
The new Steohawk workshops weren't limited to kids in the after-school program. The whole community was able to get involved. The Resilient Alaska Youth Program will open applications for new community partners this month. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wishes he had more to vote on.
Remember that whether you vote or don't, someone will get the job. Though I wish we had a none of the above option and that we could vote on the Supreme Court. Changes happen between elections, can be fired up by elections. I elect to still wear a mask in businesses, always in the minority. I worry about my friend the bus driver, about everyone working maskless with the public. At least the current COVID doesn't seem as fierce, with case numbers increasing last couple weeks, though most positive home tests don't get reported. Spring's coming, and we want to forget COVID, rising prices. Day's gravity seems tenfold, avoiding the mirror because I might see something other than myself in it. Every action, every choice can be consequential, can add up, and I don't mean just the negatives. Speak, don't roll over, be radiant, listen to others, go out of your way, make choices for a positive tomorrow, encourage others to join us there. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Some of the materials used to make lithium-ion batteries are in short supply. One startup is testing technology to recover mine waste and recycle batteries. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Getting more electric vehicles on the road will require more batteries to power them. But some of the minerals used to make lithium-ion batteries are in short supply, and China controls much of the existing industry.
And so without these materials, we won't be able to fully transition to this clean energy economy that we're all really striving and pushing for.
Megan O'Connor is CEO and co-founder of a startup called Nth Cycle. Her company is testing technology that uses electrical currents to extract and refine minerals from mine waste, low-grade ore, and recycled battery waste.
So the minerals that we're able to extract are cobalt, nickel, manganese, three materials you find in battery cathodes today.
She says Nth Cycle's extraction system is small and modular,
so that we can actually go to wherever the waste is instead of having to worry about shipping all that waste to one centralized facility.
And she says it uses less than half as much energy and emits only a quarter as much carbon pollution as traditional mineral refining technologies. So she says it could offer a more sustainable way to access untapped mineral resources in North America and help the U.S. transition to a clean transportation future. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
A new baby orca whale has been spotted in the K-Pod family off the Oregon coast. This is the first baby for the pod in 11 years. The baby was born to orca K-20, sometimes called Spock, and researchers don't yet know the baby's gender. Southern resident orcas are facing a number of challenges right now, like a lack of Chinook salmon in their range, plus pollution and underwater noise that makes it hard for them to hunt. Experts say a new baby is great news, and even more exciting if the baby is female. The J-pod, also a southern resident orca pod like the K-pod, had a birth earlier this year. Altogether, that brings the total number of these endangered animals to 75. You're listening to a spring membership Hive Drive special of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Jonah Chester, Eric Tegetoff, Lily Bolke, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO.
Now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Hello, folks. You are listening to News from the Boo. This is your opportunity to know what's going on in and around KBOO. My name is Delphine Coutier.